So the title of the talk is, I Knew It Was You, Said Piglet. And it comes from one of the many little gems in Winnie the Pooh. You don't hear? All right, I'll disappear inside it somehow. So it comes from a story of Winnie the Pooh. Piglet was busy digging a hole in the ground outside his house. "Hello, Piglet," said Pooh. "Hello, Pooh," said Piglet, giving a jump of surprise. "I knew it was you." "So did I," said Pooh. Knowing the me is a really vital teaching and the center of our spiritual life, in a way. And I would say all authentic spiritual paths or realizations, not necessarily Buddhist, it can be any spiritual journey, needs to go beyond the self. The self is a limited vision, a small slice of reality. If we keep looking at the world from the perspective of me, the basic spiritual experiences are beyond us. Obviously, you can take this into the world of the God world. God is always beyond the self, or deeply inside us, in the heart, or in the world, or the universe, or infinity, but never me. And I just think of the book of Eeyore, book of Job, which is very deep wisdom book in the Semitic tradition. Eeyore wasn't a Jew, or maybe he wasn't, but he didn't say he was a Jew, but he went on a journey through the self, through questions and struggle, a bit like we're doing, and questions about suffering. And when his liberation came at the end of the book of end of his story, it was just a voice from beyond, nothing to do with him, nothing to do with me, nothing to do with suffering. It was about the world as it is, playful, free universe. So it's the Buddha said many times, Nibbana, that is ultimate awakening, is impossible without it, if you stay inside a belief of me. But it's very hard to accept that for us. And in the groups and in discussions here in the retreat, obviously, people found it hard to understand that. And understand why. Because really, the self appears in every experience. In every thought, there's a little me saying, I think, I know, I do. It seems to be a bit like the Windows operating system in a computer. That if the Windows operating system won't work, the whole thing collapses. And indeed, A healthy sense of self is needed by a human being. If we grow up with too little self, we have psychological disturbance, psychiatric disturbance, in which we're constantly somehow looking for self that we don't have or we miss. We're constantly trying to fill the hole of depersonalization or disconnection. The guy that I talked about that worked with me in research on experiences of the beyond in the laboratory, he specializes in trauma. And people who are suffering from PTSD, from trauma, often kind of suppress the self because it's too painful. So they find themselves disconnected or empty. He was in that situation himself. They find themselves lost in emptiness because the self is too painful. It's kind of disappeared. It's suppressed. And then they're looking for connection to the world and they can't find it. So too little is makes us desperate for normal life again. And some people who have spiritual experiences that are too strong, too quick, also suffer from a self that they're looking for because it kind of vanished too fast and it's too dramatic or traumatic. So we need a good sense of self as a good basis, a functional basis. We need an operating system. Windows has to work. But too much self is also a problem. I mean, you got world leaders like Trump and others, and mostly kings are like that. That their self is so big that it's the whole kingdom is theirs, is them. They identify with the kingdom. So the kingdom and me are one. Most kings say that. The kingdom and me are one thing. Even Assad said it. I am Syria, Syria is me. And look what's happening. So a big ego is obviously painful to yourself and everybody else around you and destructive and causes suffering. So it's hard for us to see how the self is such an issue or a blockage or a problem when we need a normal self, and it's through the self that we seem to function. So one way that we can understand this a little bit more closely is to see the self as painful. And we can see it, if we look carefully, we see it all the time. Conflict, for example, is a good example of this. No end to conflict. No end to it. The conflict in the Middle East is 100 years. Two peoples living side by side. We're all living together anyway. The same piece of land, we eat the same food, we live in the same houses. You hardly know when you've moved from one place to the other place. And we're all in the same place, we're all okay, we have food to eat, there's no problem of resources, there's no problem of anything. But the story goes on, and nobody can seem to solve it. In 100 years, this is a good example. It's not thought doesn't solve it, because all the thinkers and all the philosophers and all the artists and all the politicians, no thinking has been able to solve it. It's an issue of self, identity, me, them. It's an issue of labeling, I and them. Conflict appears in our houses, in our workplace, in relationships, with our families. It's constantly there. Labeling, suppression of the other. If our relationship partner with our partners is based on two selves, egos, we're in trouble. If it's based on the mystery of a human being who is endless, and the relationship is based on discovering the other and exploring the territory of relationship itself. That's not self. That's something else. And the relationship is on a real positive journey. You can think of how much time and energy we spend. The pain of, as my grandchildren keep saying, Bali or Lo Bali, Bali, Lo Bali, Bali, Lo Bali. And every time I hear that, I go, oi, do you really need to go there? Endless, Bali, Lo Bali, Bali. And we're doing the same, of course. It's, they say it maybe more clearly, but we do exactly the same. Bali, Lo Bali, Lo Bali, Lo Bali. It's our comfort zone. We're so busy with our comfort zone. And if we experience that, if we see it clearly, endless pain to get what we want, to like, to what we like, what we don't like. The whole of our life energy is spent on sorting out liking, not liking, and it's mostly the self. Comfortable, not comfortable. I want more, I want less. I don't like this, I want that. The Buddha left the castle, left his palace of Bali, Lo Bali. The self brings constant anxiety. What will be? What I will be? What will happen? My year. The self maybe is an operating system that is designed by evolution to protect the body. Because indeed, we need a healthy self in order to protect the body. So that I need to know I can cross the road and not get knocked over by a car. If I think that it's just a bunch of arms and legs crossing the road without any controller inside, so I can let my arms and legs cross the road at any time, never mind what's coming. We need an organizing principle. That's a function. It's just a function. The body starts off as, the self starts off as a functional mechanism for organizing and helping the body, protecting the body, helping it to run away when needed, to see, to perceive. But it ends up protecting itself. It's become a big karatsiya, in a way, because it's constantly protecting itself. When someone shouts at you and says, you're an idiot, the body's fine. Nobody doing anything to your body. But the self starts. Oh, why they say that? How can they say that to me? I can't take it. I'm going to fight them back. I'm going to do this. Look at what they're doing. Look how they're treating me. Magia liya od. The self is constantly busy with threats, defenses, and armor. Shirion. When it's defending itself, it's not defending the body at all. A good example of that is speaking in public. And Christopher once brought a study that he read somewhere that asked people in a survey, what's the most frightening thing, a list of the most frightening things that you can imagine. And number one was speaking in public. And number two was a nuclear catastrophe that kills most of the people. We think of our roles and how they imprison us. We think of our stories and how they stay with us. I mentioned the other day the Holocaust story. How much a story of identities, us, we, can make our life miserable, misery. We forget that the stories that build the self are just stories. We believe them. We get inside them. I am like this. I am like that. many of us here in this retreat are going through difficult experiences. Many of us here are saying, don't tell me about all this self. I have huge inner drama going on. I can't deal with my thoughts. I'm angry about this or that. I feel very irritated. Or I got bitten by a mosquito. Please take me to the hospital. Or I think I'm going to be sick. Or I didn't sleep at night. I'm in terrible stress. Huge balloons of trouble, which the retreat actually in some way allows. In some way the retreat is a place where the inner voices get expanded and they become balloons, and that's part of our practice, because it helps us. It helps us to see dukkha, it helps us to see the voices, so we get in the dramas, and it hopefully it helps us, because by seeing the dramas, Bhagava Inayam, with four eyes, straight as they are, we have a chance of getting out of them, of letting them go. If we don't see them, they just control us. So the retreat does allow the silence and the concentration and the intensity of the hall here does allow the dramas to unfold inside us. So if you're going through dramas and issues and fears that seem to be total and big right now, don't worry, there's a bell. The bell will come and they'll disappear in supper time. But we feel these dramas. And then we say, well, don't tell me about self. I can't find the self. But you've just said, I need to go to the hospital because I got bitten by a mosquito. Who is that not self? Just look at what you're doing. Just look at the dramas. They're all about me. And someone who, in a way, can't see the self inside the dramas of life is a bit like someone riding on a horse that says, where's the horse? Where's the horse? You're riding on the horse. In terms of Buddhist psychology, the self is created from attachment. So we have experiences. We want something. We like something. We build a certain story. And it then becomes a truth, this story. We believe it. We attach to it. And it grows and builds ourselves. We are made of all the stories that we tell, or we are told, or that we know, or we think. We are built out of all the beliefs, the views. We are built, in a way, by the world that we define. We define the world, and we get proof from the world of the way we define it. Like you say, a thief will only see pockets. The world will seem to confirm our stories. If we are afraid, everything seems frightening. And then we say, it's not me, I'm not afraid. The world is like that. The world is wants to throw me into the sea. It's not me, it's the world. There's a nice little Theravada poem that I like to quote, which actually shows how this happens, this attachment. It says, "So a thought, Zorea, so a thought, and reap, Chotzea, a word. Sow a word and reap an action. Sow an action and reap a habit. Sow a habit and reap a self. Sow a self and reap a fate, Goral." We build the self as we go along in life. We keep building and building the self. And hard to understand this, but In the Buddhist psychology, the whole issue of birth and death is a result of selfing. That there is no death, birth or death of things or of bodies or of self without a self. In other words, it's so deep that actually we're afraid of death only because there's a self. Because in a way only the self dies. The body is already made of the universe. So the body doesn't die, it just changes its shape, becomes molecules again. Well, it was molecules. I don't say, I was carbon and hydrogen and oxygen, and now I'm a person. We were carbon and hydrogen and oxygen. Like the poem I read on the first day, we were made of the stars, and we go back to the stars. No problem. The problem is only the self who doesn't want to. The self, bhava, is the word in Sanskrit, bhava, the self, the making of self, happens through attachment to experiences which we want, we don't want, we make stories out of it, we build the stories, and then we believe them. That's attachment. Attachment is the belief that we have that things are like that. That's the truth. So when, and I'm responding here to many of you in the groups, and when we come up with a teaching like anatta, that we hard for us to really feel it, because we are inside a functioning self, like I said, and we don't really see it as the problem. We see it as something I need. And many of us feel this, that, well, I don't understand, people say. If I don't have a strong me, I'm going to feel lost. I need to wake up in the morning and know I exist. And know it's me waking up in the morning. What happens if I wake up in the morning and I don't know it's me? Wow. Well, you've got two responses to that. Either it's the most terrifying experience in the world, or it's the most blissful experience in the world. It depends on you. But I can understand many voices that we've been, you know, in the groups and one-to-ones and so on, are asking, well, my success in life, my journey in life, my mission in life, depends on me being somebody. I need to know who I am. I need to have a self in order to succeed. I need to have a self in order to go to work in the morning. I need to have a self in order to be a good scientist, a good high-tech person, a good teacher, a good psychologist. I can't imagine that anatta is going to help me. It's going to just undo everything. I'll be lost. I'm afraid to be less me. And this voice is very clear. And it's okay to have that voice. It's all right. I'm afraid to be less free. But it's the same voice as saying, I'm afraid to be less me. But it's the same voice that is saying, I'm afraid to be free. And there is that voice. I'm afraid to be free. It's amazing how many prisoners that have been in jail for years, when they leave jail, all they want to do is go back. Because it's a safe space that I know, instead of an unsafe space that I don't know. So fear is the major problem in relation to anatta, or being softer or more flexible or more fluid or more free in relation to me and mine. And that's why, if you look at all the mythologies, almost all the mythologies, and I read a lot of Joseph Campbell's books on the hero's journey. He wrote a book about the hero's journey. nearly all the mythologies of the guy going out of his home, Odysseus, you know, this kind of myth, going out on the journey of a hero, the first thing he has to do is deal with this fear of leaving home and safety. Once he's done that, he can battle the dragon, the demons, which are in himself, and become free, become the prince, become the liberated one. So it's a hero's journey that we need to go on, and that we are here for that. Doesn't mean to say we, especially in this context, as Osho said, we don't need to be a hero, we can be a zero. But the mythology is as if we are heroes, because we are actually seeing things, we are going out from the safe, protected comfort zone of the me that I know. So I want to answer a little bit the questions that come up, because there's one issue about anatta that I think is giving us the problem, and that is the an. The an is the not. So if, as long as we are kind of thinking about self as not, that begins the problem. If the self is not, how am I to get on with my life? If the self is a no, it's not there, it's transparent, it's disappearing, it's not real, how am I going to get up in the morning as me? How am I going to go to work? How am I going to have a relationship with my wife, my husband? From what basis? There's no me, so how do I relate to another? And the problem is the no. So let's think about the yes. So what's instead of? How do I go into a relationship with a partner from less selfing? What does it look like, that kind of relationship? How do I go to work from less me the scientist, me the businessman? So if we take ourselves, let's for a moment define anatta as the quotation that Leela brought yesterday, which is from Chesterton. If we take ourselves, why do angels fly? Because they take themselves more lightly. There's a beautiful quote from Chesterton, author, American author. If we define less selfing as taking ourselves more lightly, how are we going to act in the world? And I think we can look more deeply at what really happens in a relationship or in our daily life or at work or in relation to other people or in the street. Because what really happens in the street or in our work or in when we make a decision whether to go there or there, or to get married or not to get married, when we make a decision, it feels like me, but there's a lot happening that's not me. And basically what happens in our daily life is that we are manifesting qualities and not self. What's really happening in a relationship is in the present moment we are in relation with somebody else. And what flows between two people in a relationship is qualities. Love, attention, interest, listening, caring for, giving food to, like all the relationship we have with the wonderful cooks in this retreat. Mothering, fathering. Where's the self in that? If we look carefully, it's qualities that are manifest in the moment. In a relationship, there is a stream of qualities in the present moment, most of them spontaneous. If we just think about our own relationships, someone says something, we respond. How are you this morning? I'm fine. What's happening in that moment? A relation is established. Presence is there. We listen, we answer. There's no real selfing in that. So in fact, our daily life is a manifesting qualities of ourselves, manifesting our being, not me, me, me. And so when we take ourselves more lightly, the actions in the world become more deeply qualities. We pay more attention to qualities and less to self. The love gets bigger. The attention gets bigger. The listening gets bigger. The presence gets bigger. The sense of connection gets bigger. The sense of inner freedom gets bigger. The sense of allowing things to be as they are and allowing others to be as they are, that gets bigger. The sense of calmness gets bigger. The sense of understanding human situation gets bigger. All of those get bigger and take the place of the me and the mine that was there before. They're there. They were there before too, but we maybe allowed the self to dominate, or we have a thought, I must decide what I'm going to do for my life. It's the me that decides. It's not really the me that decides. It's qualities that decide. How do we make a decision in life? Something tells us this is fitting more than that. It's not so much the me. If we look carefully at how we make a decision, it's not the me that stands there. Me has to decide aleph or bet. Now, me, tell me what to do. It doesn't work like that. Decisions are made because we see. We see this is fitting and this is not fitting. This feels right and that feels not right. This my tummy tells me, I go there. Intuition tells me this is better. Qualities, awareness, mind, consciousness is telling us where to go, how to live. So when the self is reduced, actually it liberates powers which are more effective in life. But we don't believe that because we believe the self. We believe it's the self that does everything, and if I have less self, I don't know how to work. It's a belief. And we can't, it's difficult for us to go beyond that belief. We don't know quite how to see the world from beyond the self. So we think, if I have less self, I don't know how to work. I don't know how to choose anything. I don't know how to get up in the morning. It's just unfamiliarity. That's all it is. Like the poem I gave, action makes habit. We're inside habit. We're inside habit of bhava, of building self. And we don't know what the world is like outside that. So that's the yes, yes side, not the anatta side, the side of the positive. The more we can relax around selfing, with less belief in me and mine, the more we manifest qualities in life and we can be more successful, not less successful. And if you think of people that are really making an impact in life, really significant people, very often they're not led by me and mine. They have a bigger sense around them. In my own life, I found it utterly amazing. As the selfing went down, reduced, retreat after retreat after retreat, sort of the self just sort of got smaller and smaller, and space got bigger and bigger. And I find myself able to dance in so many weddings and sort of really free. I could give a Dharma talk and then the next minute go to my room and write a scientific paper. There's no conflict because it's qualities, it's consciousness, it's mind, it's abilities. It doesn't help me learn Hebrew, but never mind. That's just the wiring. And as we find the self and the suffering that comes from being locked in the prison of me, 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 and Bali, Bali, then with those qualities are more joy. With those qualities are more inner peace. With those qualities are more ease. And from there we change the world. From those qualities of joy and peace and ease, we go out and change the world. We think we need to change the world by being a strong me, but actually we change the world from being a free being, joyful, free, and compassionate. So we're learning that here, and the way we're learning it is just to be connected more to awareness and less to the self story. The awareness, the presence, is what we go out into the world with. So we go out into the world with more awareness, more presence, more intuition, and from this place we act. So we don't need to be in the anatta, the un, the not. Leave the not, not self. So you might say, well, didn't the Buddha say no self? Yeah, but the way to see the transparency, hashkifut, of self, is by seeing the self. Because you can't get free from something if you don't see it. So the way to not self is through self. So the first thing to do is see that we're riding on a self and say, yes, here's, I'm riding on a horse and I see I'm riding on a horse. Not to ride on the horse and say, where's the horse? Where's the horse? There's a nice Theravada story about two monks sitting in the forest, and all of a sudden a beautiful girl rushes past, and they both see this beautiful girl and she rushes past. After a while a man comes rushing up and says, did you see a beautiful woman rush past here? I'm the husband and I'm trying to catch her. And the monks had compassion on the woman, and one monk said, no woman came past here. So the man went on, and the other monk said to this monk, well, how can you lie? It's against the precepts to lie. He said, I didn't lie, I just didn't see a woman, I just saw teeth passing by. Just saw teeth. We don't really need to see all the time the me. We look carefully, we see the me, but we see the me made of a kaleidoscope of feelings, impressions, ideas, thoughts, beliefs. The me is a kaleidoscope. The me is a response to what happens in the world. Something happens and we respond as me. That's attachment, bhava. We like something and we feel, I like it. We don't like, we have a tummy ache. Think, oh, my tummy's hurting. It's a response, the my. Without a tummy ache, there'd be less my. Partly what we're doing here, what we can do here, is be interested in the way the self arises and reduces. And I'm inviting you to practice this. When you feel discomfort or threat, see the way the self jumps up. Something happens we don't like. Oh, me. We relax in blissful lying meditation at the end of the evening. Nothing to do, no one to be. All the roles, tafkidim in life, have gone. No, not much self. Maybe a little bit. Here and there, thought. Ah, what's happening tomorrow? Ah. Mosquito, but generally much less self. Then we get up and find someone's taken our cushion, Or we go to the room and someone's taken our blanket. Oh, me, my blanket, my cushion, my this, my bed, my space, my. Watch that. Watch the flow of me and mine during the day. We're not trying to pretend anatta. If we look at the self and the way it's dynamic, it's a kaleidoscope, a group of feelings and sensations and thoughts and memories. It's built from many, many things, which are always changing. If we see that, that is the way to experience anatta. Not to have some theory of not self. For those of us who are philosophers here, I'm afraid I've got some bad news for you. And the bad news is in the form of a quotation from a sutta that I would like to read. Someone asked the Buddha, what is wise attention? And he answers, this is how we attend without wisdom. Was I existing in the past? Or was I not existing in the past? What was I in the past? How was I in the past? Having been what did I become in the past? Shall I be in the future? Shall I not be in the future? What shall I be in the future? How shall I be in the future? Or they are inwardly confused about the present. And here is the questions we're getting in the groups. Am I? Am I not? What am I? How am I? Where has this being come from? Where will it go? When people give attention unwisely in this way, one of six views arises. The view self exists for me arises as true, or the view no self exists for me arises as true and established. Or the view, I perceive the self with self arises as true. Or the view, I perceive not self with self arises as true. Or the view, I perceive self with not self. Or they have some view like, it is this self of mine that speaks and feels and experiences here and there the result of good and bad action. And this self of mine is permanent and lasting and not subject to change, and it will keep going. These views, monks, are called the thicket of views. Thicket is a svach. The wilderness of views, the twistedness of views, the wobbliness of views, the binding of views. Bound by the binding of views, the ordinary person is not freed from birth, aging, and death, from sorrow, pain, and despair. They are not freed from dukkha. It's quite a kind of a teaching to leave the issue of am I, not am I, and as a view, and just keep experiencing in the present moment what's really happening in this mind-body being as a dynamic, flowing, changing, living being. And the self is seen as a dynamic kind of kaleidoscope of change in response to the world. And slowly, slowly we'll understand and we can live lightly because of the seeing, not because of views about me. There are many, many places. This is a life journey. It doesn't stop when we leave the retreat. Our relationships with our people close to us, they can be a relationship which builds selfing. Me, they're attacking me, they're not the same as me. I want a relationship with only Buddhist meditators that have done at least 2 retreats. I don't want a partner that does something else. I need them like this, I need a partner like that. If they say something against me, I react, I'm in conflict, they press my buttons. Or a relationship can be a mirror to ourself, can show us ourself. A relationship can show us selfing and non-selfing. Our partner can be a mirror to us and show us how we really are. A relationship can be one of the greatest fields of Dharma practice, stronger than any retreat. Our partners can show us ourself and our non-self. There's a beautiful article written by a mother who was a monk, Diana Winston. It's in my website, actually. And she wrote an article called Mama Nibbana. Mama Nibbana. Nibbana. And it's basically to say, I was a monk for 14 years, a nun, sorry, for 14 years in a monastery, Buddhist monastery in the East. And now I have a baby. And the baby is the biggest, biggest Dharma teacher. When I get up and change the 10,000th dirty nappy, not sleeping, maze non-self. One of the big, very nice example, it's a small example, but it's a very nice one for me because I simply remember it for so many, many years. In one of my failed attempts to learn Hebrew, which was at the University of Haifa, so I used to go to the University of Haifa and go to Ulpan, and I drove from Klil to Haifa with my white Subaru. And old Subaru. And one day I came out of the class and my Subaru had been stolen. But there was a white Subaru exactly like mine still there. Only it wasn't mine. It was somebody else's. And I stood there looking at this exact same and thinking, someone has stolen my Subaru. And I go, oh, my Subaru has been stolen. If they'd stolen the other one that didn't belong to me, the same thing, the same Subaru, exactly the same thing happened, I wouldn't care a damn. How amazing this me and mine. What a strong, it was like such a beautiful daily life insight. We can learn from the moment-by-moment experiences in this retreat and in our life how bhava, how we build a self in a response to conditions that are constantly changing. Someone challenges us, the self appears. Fear, defense, shiryon, which is part of the self, the wall we build around, protection, and the self. Someone loves us, we melt. The wall is melted, less self, less need to defend, more love. Conditions changing all the time. We can see them in 1 second after 1 second. Shnia achre shnia. Conditions, conditions, conditions. This moment that we're experiencing together is totally different from the moment that was 1 second ago or 1 minute ago. We are all different. Every one of us is a different human being now than we were 1 minute ago. The situation is different. The conditions are different. The thoughts are different. The cells in the body are different. The relationships are different. What we pay attention to is different. So conditions create results and responses. And we need to kind of look at that really carefully. And that's, we can do that really well in meditation. How conditions produce results, responses, beliefs, thoughts, views, reactions. And we begin to understand that the whole of reality is like that, is built from conditionality, from conditions. And then we begin to see that we are a bunch of conditions. We are ourselves. This self, this being, this human being, is not a thing, but a bunch of conditions. The Buddha kept saying to his monks, all you are is a load of porridge walking about. We could say in Pesach, a load of rice porridge walking about. That's all you are. You're built out of daisa. So you're a bunch of daisa walking about. Conditions. All we are is a bunch of conditions. We are made by conditions and we make conditions. We make the next moment. We are made by the next moment. So there's this constant flow. And seeing this is one of the ways to experience beyond the self. To see the conditionality of things. Everything is moving and flowing. Nothing is fixed. Enki ba'on. Nothing is fixed. It's all moving and flowing. Just like the poem that I read the very first day. We can experience, and I'm talking about not anatta, but the yes, what we experience in the sense of the real experience and not of not, but of yes. We can experience the knower and the knowing and the known in an experience. There is a breath. The breath is known. Along with the knowing of the breath, a knower arises and we say, I am breathing. But if we break that down, we can actually see in the moment of one breath, and I'm inviting you to do this, the arising of the knower, the arising of the knowing, and the arising of the known. The object is the known. Right now, many of you are looking at me. So I'm the object. But you are the subject, looking at the object. And how do you know that this object, Stephen, exists? Because you know. Consciousness is telling you there's an object called Stephen. Knower, knowing and known in every experience. Self and the world are in constant relation. If you look at this bowl, you are in relationship to this bowl. You're in relation to it. You're actually, there's an experience going on which has two sides. The side of the bowl and the side of you. Two sides to this experience. One side is you, one side is the bowl. The same thing. It's actually one thing. But it has a knower, a knowing, and a known. So all these kind of practices and awarenesses and understandings of conditionality, of seeing, of the dynamic nature of us and of the world, of responses and flow and kaleidoscope, they all open more space. And what happens in spiritual life is that we experience more space, spaciousness, less contracted, less solid, less closed inside me and mine, more open, more holes. So instead of looking at the world like this begins to look like that. We can see more. And this is not only with the mind. Everything I'm talking about is the same with the heart. And sometimes even clearer with the heart. Because the heart tends to go quite easily beyond the me. When we love others. We are connected to others. Compassion is a movement beyond boundaries. Compassion and wisdom together are both breaking this illusion of me, and both expanding out beyond boundaries. And as that happens, we are experiencing more freedom. We're experiencing the world differently. And how do we experience the world differently? How does non-self experience the world? How does someone free of self experience the world? And the answer is many answers. It's not simple. But one of the ways is that the world is perfect and happens by itself. That the world is perfect and happens by itself. There's no doer, because the me, the illusion of control, is gone. So everything happens by itself. And then you can ask the sort of $64,000 question. So in that case, who gets enlightened? $64,000, the big question. Who gets enlightened? And I can tell you the answer. Enlightenment gets enlightened. If there's no person there to be enlightened, enlightenment happens to itself. The Dharma happens to itself. Maybe you need a human being to start the process of. The Dharma happens to itself. Enlightenment happens to itself. And that is why the word for reality in the traditional Pali language, the word for the reality ultimately as it seen, as it can be seen with an enlightened view, is tathāta. And tathāta is very similar to the English word that, or the Sanskrit sat, tathāta. And the Buddha gave himself the name Tathāgata, meaning somebody that's gone to that, or has come from that. Don't think about it, okay? No thought. It's not a thought. When the self dissolves and there is awakening, what's left is that. And it's not so different from the name of God, Ehiye Asher Ehiye. It's not so different. Tathāta, that-ness, that. So I want to finish with a quote, beautiful quote from Nisargadatta Maharaj, great non-dual teacher. And maybe I'll give another talk in this retreat on non-duality, unless everyone's really exhausted from all of this. but I'll quote Nisargadatta Maharaj, who said, "Wisdom tells me I am nothing. Love tells me I am everything. Between the two, my life flows." Thank you. So we'll take a couple of minutes.